Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week, any more than 112 countries over the Internet worldwide. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the food crisis when we come back. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in the Scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide agenda. And the Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of the Bible, the God of Israel, and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers and preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, for more information, why don't you just call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Then click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Well, the last time we were talking about this thing of food lines, and I wanted to make a comment about the food line. Has anybody ever thought about planting a garden? You know, one of the most fundamental duties, responsibilities, or obligations that a person has is to feed himself. I mean, I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter here, but, you know, from the time I was looking it up, we were taught and trained that he that doesn't work shouldn't eat. He that doesn't work shouldn't eat. And that the basic responsibility of a man who is worse than an infidel if he doesn't provide for his own family. And so men, the menfolk, you know, when I was a kid growing up, were saddled with the duty, the obligation, the responsibility to feed, clothe, and house their womenfolk and their children. I know it's old and it's quaint and it's kind of old-fashioned, but that's the way I was raised. That's what I thought. And so as a child growing up, I was taught how to put a seed in the ground. You know, you put a seed in the dirt and you water it a little bit. And that seed will grow up. And when it matures, you'll have some food off of it. It could be a tomato plant, could be a pepper plant, could be some corn or potatoes or something like that. And it requires work, and it requires weeding. And I just had a class here on subsistence farming. We call it how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. And there was a man and his wife came down here from, Iowa or Ohio, one or the other. And they left. They just stayed here for a couple of days. And we were out working in the garden, and they just disappeared. It's happened twice. I've been here teaching this school 25 years, and you know, normally when people pay for their school, you know, they want to get their money's worth. I had a Mason guy here one time. I guess I got off on masonry, and he got mad and left. And that was 10, 15 years ago. And then I had this couple here, and they left. And one of the students said, "Do you know why those people left?" And I said, "No, I don't have a clue. They didn't say a word." And the lady, it was a man and his wife, and the lady said, "This weeding is demeaning. Weeding in the garden is demeaning." I didn't know that. You know, I'm an old man now, and weeding in the garden never seemed to me to be demeaning. And building fence never struck me as being demeaning labor, sweating and working and getting dirty. I never did know that. But I suppose if you've been to college, and I reported on this some time back now, you know, a couple, 3 weeks ago, concerning school, I said public school is the cause of crime. You want more crime, you need more public school. And it just kind of fit this lady and this man pretty well. Nice people. I don't have anything against them one way or the other. But you see, once these people go to school, they get a degree, they've been to college, and they come out and they don't work. People that go to college don't work. They go to a job site, and they call it labor, they call it work, and they get paid for doing things. I don't deny that. But they don't produce any food or fiber. Now, there's three things that people need. It's food, clothing, and shelter. I mean, you cannot live without shelter. You can't live without food, and you can't live without clothes. I guess you could pretty well live in Hawaii without clothes, so it probably isn't so true there. It might be a little embarrassing running around naked, you know, but it doesn't get cold enough over there to be a threat to you. But let me tell you where I'm at here. You would not survive here in Missouri without clothes. You've got to have shelter. You've got to have clothes here in Missouri, where I'm from. So the lady now says this is demeaning. Producing her own food is demeaning. So last time I reported to you, a lady here, the line makes clear that any economic recovery has bypassed this community. When it started 2 years ago, volunteers were feeding 17 families. Now they're feeding 500 families. Okay, well then, what happens when they're feeding 5,000 families or 50,000 or 500,000 or 5 million or 50 million or 500 million or... Do you know, there's coming a point in time when these volunteers here in Ohio who started out feeding 17 people are now feeding 500. Do you know there's going to come a time when they will not be able to feed all of the people who are coming to them? I mean, I don't want to be the bearer of bad tidings, but I just wanted to point out to you that, you know, I'm an old man and I've got a little energy in my body. I used to have a lot of energy, now I've got a little energy. And I used to be able to go out and really put in a day's work, and I could produce a lot in a day, and I called it useful, productive, meaningful work. At the end of the day, what did I get done? How much more wealth have I created today than I created yesterday, or that I've got today that I didn't have yesterday? Useful, productive, meaningful work is where you actually create something new that didn't occur, hasn't been, and wouldn't be if we didn't work to produce it. Now, boys and girls, all that you have in life comes out of the ground. I mean, this is a fundamental. I mean, we're getting right down to the dirt. You, boys and girls, came out of the ground. You know, our Creator himself said, dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. Now, I know we don't like to hear that, and many of us like to get cremated. Okay. Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. Now, I was reminded that up in New Brunswick, I believe it is, in Canada, where they buried the Titanic survivors, they went out and, you know, picked up the Titanic survivors. Well, they had a little project going up there, and they wanted to check the DNA of some babies and see if they could identify who these babies belonged to. You know, dead babies, dead children, you know. What were their names? Because they didn't have any names to put on the gravestones. I don't know why it makes a lot of difference after 100 years, but, you know, for some reason somebody wanted to do that. So they went up there to the graves, and they started digging them up. And they were surprised that in less than 100 years, there wasn't anything left. I mean, even the bones of those people had dissolved into the elements and gone back into the ground. Oh, they picked up a few bone fragments here and there, but they weren't able to get any DNA out of them. Now, you know, that's pretty fundamental. Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. Now, boys and girls, all wealth comes out of the ground. And in agriculture, one of the beauties of agriculture is that it is sustainable. That is, it repeats itself over and over and over again. Just because we harvested all the tomatoes last year doesn't mean that we can't produce more tomatoes in the same space, the same ground this year. So year after year after year, I got a garden down here, and I've got some raised beds, and we put in tomatoes and peppers and, you know, rutabagas and watermelons and things like that, and we eat off of our garden. Now, I have 11 raised beds, and these 11 raised beds will produce enough food to feed 6 people per year. Now, they're 6.5 feet wide, that's 6.5, times 60 feet long, that's 390 square feet. For simplicity, I'm going to round that off to 400 square feet, times 11, which gives us, let's see if I can do this again, 400 times 11. You have to forgive me here, that's 4,400. I went to public school, and I'm still handicapped, but 4,400 square feet. That 4,400 square feet, I could feed 20 people off of that 4,400 square feet if I put my mind to it. If I put my mind to it. Now, I don't do that because I'm lazy and I just don't want to work that hard. But if I put my mind to it, I could. Let me give you an illustration here. If I got 400 square feet in my raised bed, do you know how much space it takes to grow one cabbage, one cauliflower, one head of lettuce? About 1 square foot, about 12 inches. I can get 390 cabbages off of one raised bed. We would have one cabbage every day for 365 days off of one raised bed. So I could do that twice a year here. We have a 9-month growing season, and so cabbage takes about 90 days to grow. And so in a 6-month growing season, assuming I got them in, you know, early, say in April, May, and June, I could plant a second crop and get July, August, and September. So, you know, cabbage and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and broccoli and certain things like that. I could grow to a year. Now that's 390, and that's called square foot gardening, by the way, the Rodale people call it. That'd be 390 plus 390. I'd have 780 cabbages. Now, do you think that on 780 cabbages, I can feed a family of 6? That's just one bed. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is that last program, I pointed out to you that there's 500 families, 500 people. Now, if 500 people are standing in line, I'm presuming that the man isn't standing there with his wife and 5 kids. That it's probably the wife standing in line, or it's the husband standing in line. And that these 500 people that are standing in line taking these handouts are 500 families. And I'm sitting here asking the question, well, why can't these 500 families feed themselves? I mean, just come on, let's be rational, intelligent people. 500 families are standing in line waiting for George Gordon to donate food so that some people over here can collect the food and take it out and distribute that food to these people. And 500 families want to receive that food. Excuse me, but I had to go down in my garden. I had to demean myself. As this lady said, you know, this is demeaning. And I had to demean myself in order to grow, produce, and create that food out of the ground, because all wealth comes out of the ground. And you have to work upon the ground to get it out. You know, the cotton that's in your shirt came out of the ground. Even if you're wearing a Dacron or nylon, you know, that came from plastic. That came from petroleum, which came out of the ground. You know, boys and girls, everything that we have, you know, the wood and the rock that we build our houses and bricks that we make, you know, all of that material comes out of the ground. And it requires somebody. Somebody had to demean themselves by actually physically working and sweating to create those bricks, to create the concrete, you know, to pour that concrete slab, you know, to go out in the woods and cut that tree down and to haul it into the mill and to cut it up into boards and sort the boards out. And some carpenter took the boards and cut them, put them together to build that house and so on. All of that is demeaning. All of that is labor. All of that is useful, productive, meaningful work. And the basics of life is that each one of us provides his food, clothing, and shelter for himself. Now, it is true, and I'm not opposed to people doing this. Some people, you know, they don't want to work. They do not want to do demeaning work. They want to do something else. So they go to school and they get a degree and they get educated, and then they go out and they punch buttons on a computer and they convert their time into money, and then they go out into the marketplace and they buy the food, clothing, and shelter. And that's the normal way that we call that an economy. And then it is some guys are driving trucks and some guys are building houses and some other guys over here are making bricks, and different people do different things, and maybe even gets a job at the Goodyear company and makes tires, until one day the Goodyear company says, well, we think we can make tires cheaper in Taiwan, so we're going to move our manufacturing plant offshore and we'll eliminate these jobs here. Well, did it ever occur to you that before the Goodyear company built that tire factory up there in Ohio, that there were people living in Ohio doing demeaning work and feeding, clothing, and housing themselves before the Goodyear tire company built the tire plant? Before there were any jobs there. There was an old adage when I was a kid, you know, when you lost your job, the adage was, well, I was looking for a job when I found that one. Now somebody will say, well, there's no employment out there. There's no work. I'm unemployed. These 500 people here are unemployed because the Goodyear Tire Company closed their doors. Now, when a person says that I'm unemployed, what they're really saying is all the work has been done. I want to tell you something here, kids. I'm sure that the Goodyear Tire Company was paying $20 an hour to those workers, and then they discovered that for $5 an hour they could do that same work down in Mexico and then ship the tires into the United States. And the last time I reported to you that it's the president and the 544 other members of the federal government that make our trade policy. If you'll remember, it was Bill Clinton that went out here and said we needed this NAFTA program and sold that to us, and we bought it. And Ross Perot said you're gonna be real sad and sorry now that you're offshoring your jobs here with this globalization and free trade. But, you know, here again, you know, people are people, and they're gonna vote. By God, we're going to have our president, and we're going to have our politicians. And they're telling us this is good for us. And now the results is you get 500 people here up in this one little spot here in Ohio. And my point is, those 500 people there, if they knew how, could feed themselves. Honest to God. And the reason that I brought this up is because these people all live in houses someplace, or at least some of them do. Now, it may be that some of those 500 people are living in a condominium. Or, you know, maybe they're living someplace else, doing something else. But most people that I know, that I come in contact with, you know, ordinary Joe Sixpacks, and I live in a little village here called Isabella, Missouri. And all the people here in Isabella, Missouri have a little plot of ground. A little plot of ground. Now, I just pointed out 400 square feet of ground. 400 square feet. That's 6.5 feet wide by 60 feet long. Will feed a family for a year. Now, you know, you don't have to eat just cabbage, but I was just using cabbage as an illustration. That, you know, maybe in North Dakota you can't get two crops. You know, hell, in North Dakota it might take 800 square feet. You know, I'm not going to tell you how many square feet you got to have. I just wanted to point out to you that if you've got a house and you've got a lawn, you people are spending more money planting grass and keeping up that lawn than it would cost you to put in the garden and to feed your family. Now, you know, if this is demeaning standing in line waiting for a handout, or if it's demeaning going out there and working in the garden and pulling weeds, may I remind you that somebody had to go out and pull the weeds. Somebody had to do the demeaning work. Why shouldn't it be you? So when this lady left, you know, I said, well, that's fine. That's fine. The day will come when that lady is going to be hungry. And those words, this is demeaning work and I'm not going to do it, will fly today because she can go back to her job at the insurance company or the hospital or wherever it is that she's working, and she can trade her labor for money, and she can go out in the marketplace and she can buy food. Boys and girls, the thing I wanted to bring to your attention is the world is headed for famine. F-A-M-I-N-E, famine, famine. We're headed for famine. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter. I'm here to tell you that this food crisis is global in nature. It's never been that way in the history of the world. We've never had a global, a worldwide food crisis, a food shortage. Never happened in history. It's always been local or regional. It is true, we had famine in Ethiopia. It is true, we had famine in the Horn of Africa. It is true, we had famine in China. But we never had famine worldwide. Now, the world's food stocks are now interdependent because of globalization and free trade. I don't know if that's good or bad or right or wrong. I'm just a reporter just telling you that's the way it is. And I also wanted to point out to you that people like this lady and her husband, who think that this is demeaning work, are relying upon what we call corporate agribusiness in place of biological agriculture to feed them. And there's a crucial difference over here. Remember, my 400 square feet can feed a family for a year. Commercial agriculture can't do that. They can't do that because their business model is something different. You see, the Ten Commandments is a business model. It's more than that, but it's a business model. And the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto is a business model. And the Communist Manifesto is a top-down agricultural program, which is designed to industrialize the agricultural process. And so we call it corporate agribusiness in this country. In Russia, they call it state farms, you know, or in communal groups and organizations, they call that a commune. A commune. Now, we experimented with this communal process back when the Pilgrims got over here years ago in 1620. They all went out and worked, and they put all of their food into a communal warehouse. And they practiced from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And they all went to the community storehouse to get their food out of it. And they damn near starved to death their very first year because there were people who didn't work and produce very much. And they put all of their food into the community warehouse. And there were people that worked real hard and produced a whole bunch, and they put their food into the communal warehouse. Then when it came wintertime and they were all eating out of the community warehouse, they were all taking out according to their needs. And so you can't get more out than you put in. And so they learned right away that that didn't work very well, so they went from the community warehouse, that is, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, to, well, we'll all just produce and provide for ourselves. Now, I was over in Tennessee some years back, and we stopped at a museum. My wife and I were kind of always curious people, and we like to stop, and we look at these museums and roadside parks and things, and we happened to go into this one place. And a very, very interesting, well-preserved little group of cottages, a little village in Tennessee, back at the turn of the century. And they were depicting, you know, the turn of the century Tennessee life. And this is back around 1900, you know, 1880 to around 1910, and that time frame over there. And this was a log cabin. It was actually a squared logs. They'd split these logs out and built two cabins together with a breezeway in between. In the breezeway was a wooden barrel. This wooden barrel wasn't an ordinary barrel. It was big, a big wooden barrel. And my guesstimate is it probably was as big as 4 55-gallon barrels. My guesstimate is held about 200 gallons if you had filled it with water. And this barrel was made out of wood. And there was a little sign or a little plaque, and it said, this family filled this wooden cask every fall with corn. If the cask was full, the family would eat well for the whole winter. If the cask was only two-thirds full or three-quarters full, then the family would have to ration. They'd have to be careful about how they ate their corn or how much corn they used. If the cask was half full, they would have to go on starvation rations. Now, this is just one family. And they measured their prosperity by how much corn they brought in every year and put into this big barrel. Now, no doubt they had other food besides that, but corn was their staple, just like rice is the staple of Oriental people and potatoes are the staple of Americans. And, you know, when we sit down to eat, we have to have meat and potatoes here in this country. Over in Japan, they got to have rice and fish, and people have certain staples. Well, these people, their staple was corn. And they do that in Mexico. You know, staple is corn down in Mexico. Now, each family produced for themselves, and we didn't have any famine in this country. In fact, I got to tell you a little story here. Over in Russia, when they put in all of these communal big state farms over there, their agricultural production went way down. You see, commercial agriculture produces much less per acre. The commercial farmer, he does not produce one cabbage on a square foot. Just one man produces thousands of cabbages, but he has a lot more ground. And here in America, it's common, you know, for a grain farmer up in North Dakota to farm 15 sections. That's 15 square miles. That's one farmer. That's one man has control of that 15 square miles. And I say that we'd be better off if we had, instead of one man controlling 15 sections, if we had 15 families with one section each. Or better yet, 30 families with a half a section. Or maybe even better yet, 60 families with a quarter of a section, or so on. And that's because we get more production per person when one person is out here producing. and each person producing will produce a lot more than one. So while it's true here in America, we have one farmer feeding hundreds of people, about 150. If you had the same 150 people and you gave them 400 square feet, they would produce a hell of a lot more than that one farmer. In fact, they would produce hundreds of times more. So if we had an agricultural base to our agronomy, instead of an industrial base for our agronomy, we would produce more. And we would produce more because the lady who said that this weeding is demeaning, that's fine, lady. As long as you can feed yourself, you get after it. But if you can't feed yourself, then you go hungry. And in 1900, in this country, every family fed themselves. It was a basic in life. Every family feeds themselves. But in America today, our families no longer can feed themselves, and indeed they do not feed themselves. They rely upon somebody else to feed them, whether they're standing in line for a handout or whether they're standing in line at the checkout counter. The food that you eat is not the food that you produced. It was produced by somebody else. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that all you people are standing at the checkout counter in the store. Wake up one day and find out that the people who are producing your food are not able to produce enough of it. Well, then doesn't that tell you that you're going to have to stand in line and share the shortage? And that's what communism has provided for the world. Stand in line and share the shortage. Now, capitalism, on the other hand, or the free market economy, I prefer the words free market economy, produces plenty for everybody. It simply says, you take care of yourself and I'll take care of myself. See, I'm not standing in line to share the shortage. I'm down in my garden doing demeaning work, providing for myself in abundance. I don't have to stand in line. I don't have to decide, should I buy medicine or should I buy food? I have more food than I can use. It's common for me to take my milk for today. For instance, my refrigerator has a gallon of cream in it, and my refrigerator has 8 gallons of milk. So today, when I milk my 2 cows, I'm going to pour it out to the chickens. I'm going to pour 4 gallons of milk to the chickens today, and maybe tomorrow. And you people are standing in line paying $4 to $5 a gallon for milk in the grocery store, and the milk in the grocery store isn't fit for human consumption to start with. At least I wouldn't drink it. And the bottom line to this is that it's not just here in the United States. It's all over the industrialized world. The prices have nearly doubled. They'll have more than doubled over the last 36 months, but they nearly doubled in the past year. Doesn't that send a signal to you that there's less and less food available? And that if it continues on this way, that there's going to be less and less food available in the future until we go back to where we have rationing. Now, the other day, I saw that there was a little bit of involuntary rationing being imposed by Costco and Sam's over rice. Maybe you saw that little flap Katie and Brian both reported on. Boys and girls, that's an inconvenience here in this country. I mean, I'm not suggesting that that's rationing in a serious point or a serious context, but I can remember in World War II, you see, we were rationed during the wartime, and we had these ration cards. And you could only get so much of it, and you had to share the shortage, you had to do without. And we planted what we called victory gardens back in World War II, and all of the families in our little town, Corbell, had victory gardens. We did not have lawns. There were no lawns. I don't ever remember seeing a lawn until I was about, oh, hell, I must have been 8 years old, and I went to San Francisco, California, and I saw green grass growing. And it was a marvel to me at age 8, San Francisco, California, green grass in front of people's houses instead of bare dirt and tomatoes, peppers, and food. And so that was after World War II. And as I grew up, I noticed that more and more people grew grass and fewer people grew rutabagas and potatoes. And so in our culture today, we stand in line for a food handout rather than dig up the grass and plant a garden. And boys and girls, most of you people have a lawn in your front yard bigger than is necessary to provide all of the food for your family for a year, if you only knew how. Now, meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compacted disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. At georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the food crisis around the world. And it's not just reported, you know, on CBS and ABC, you know, little blurbs. The International Herald Tribune had this report. In an unforeseen and unprecedented shift, the world food supply is dwindling rapidly, and food prices are soaring to historic levels. The top food and agriculture official of the United Nations warned Monday. The change has created a very serious risk that fewer people will be able to get food, particularly in the developing world. This is Jacques Duoff, or Diouf, head of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. The agency's food price index rose more than 40% this year, compared with 9% the year before. That's a rate that was already unacceptable, he said. Now figures show that the total cost of foodstuffs imported by the neediest countries rose 25% in the past year. So at the same time, reserves of cereals are severely depleted. The FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization, records show that world wheat stores declined 11% this year, to the lowest level since 1980. And that corresponds to 12 weeks of world consumption, much less than the average of 18 weeks consumption in storage during the period 2000 to 2005. There are only 8 weeks of corn left, down from 11 weeks in the earlier period. Prices of wheat and oil seeds are at record highs. Wheat prices have risen by $130 a ton, or 52%, over the past year. U.S. wheat futures broke $10 a bushel for the first time, and the agricultural equivalent of $100 a barrel oil. Now, the price of wheat, the last numbers that I saw, this was December 17th of 2007, is the report date. Pulled it off the internet here. So 6 months ago, in December of 2007, the price of wheat hit $10 a bushel. And the last number I saw was at $26. $26 a bushel. Now, a bushel weighs about 60 pounds, so if you took $26 divided by 60, 43 cents a pound for wheat. Now, in 2000, the price of wheat was about $3.50 a bushel, so it'll give you $4 a bushel. And divided by 60, it was 6 cents a pound. So it's gone from 6 cents a pound to 43 cents a pound in the last 5 or 6 years. And I'm here to tell you that 43 cent a pound wheat's dirt cheap. Dirt cheap. That price of wheat should have been 43 cents a pound 25, 30 years ago. And government, those 545 people, artificially kept the price of wheat low through globalization, through industrial agriculture, through heavy inputs of commercial fertilizers. Remember, after World War II, we had a choice. We were at a crossroads. We were having declining fertility in our soils here in the United States because we wouldn't practice the land Sabbaths and Jubilees. So we were using slash and burn agricultural techniques. And then when our population grew to 150 million people, we no longer had enough land to practice that with. And we had a choice in front of us, and that was industrial agriculture with chemical fertilizer, or we've got to clean up our act and go back to practicing agriculture from the bottom up as opposed to agribusiness from the top down. Well, you guessed it, our 545 members of government decided that what we needed in this country was agribusiness and an administration from the top down, and that's what we opted for. Worked fine, for about 50 years. But now the world's population has grown, and with NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization, we now have a business model, an agricultural business model that is unsustainable. Now, this came about in the Soviet Union. They adopted, back in the 1920s and 30s, this agricultural, agribusiness model. And they soon discovered they couldn't feed their people, and so they gave the people a half an acre. Not everybody in the country, just the people that are working on these communal farms. And the workers on the communal farms would put in their 12-hour day working for the government on the communal farm. That's the state farm growing wheat. Then they'd come home at night, and in 2 hours or 3 hours after work, they would work on their one-half-acre plot. Here was the outcome. Using free enterprise, that is individual initiative, the marketplace, the farm workers of the Soviet Union produced as much food on the one-half-acre plots as all of the state government operations combined. So half of the food came from industrial agribusiness, and the other half of their food came from the free enterprise sector. I was asked one time, well, what would you do to solve the problem in the Soviet Union? And I said, I'd give them 1 acre. Because one person with 1 acre is going to produce many, many times more per acre than the big state farmer. And that's because the big state farmer is using tractors. See, my 11 raised beds down here are all handwork. I don't even need a rototiller. I've got one, but I don't need it. And when I was a kid, we didn't have rototillers, and all the labor that went into a garden was done by hand. All of the ground was turned over with a shovel and rakes and hose. You didn't have any power tools at all. It was all done by hand. And my grandmother and grandfather, after work, I mean, my granddad, when he came home after work, we had 100 chickens, and we ate those chickens. My grandmother raised those chickens. My granddad would come home after work and work in the garden. And it wasn't just him. It was all the neighbors, all the mill workers that worked in the mill came home, and they worked in their gardens. Nobody had a lawn. I never saw green grass in anybody's yard. And if you saw green grass in somebody's yard, it was a weed, and you pulled it. And everybody was growing tomatoes and peppers and cabbages and cauliflowers. They were growing fruit trees, boys and girls. They were producing food. We never saw, and in all of my life, I never saw people standing in line taking welfare and food stamps and food handouts. Not when I was a kid. It was demeaning to fail to provide for your family. It was demeaning to fail to feed yourself. Today, Americans are unable to feed themselves. And I wouldn't say just Americans. I'll bet you Australians can't feed yourselves either. I'll bet you guys in New Zealand. I'll bet the average New Zealander could not feed his own family off his own ground. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is that if you're living in Cleveland, Ohio, and you have a lot, 50 by 100 feet, that's 5,000 square feet, 5,000 square feet, and you've got a lawn in the front yard and a lawn in the backyard, you got a 2,000 square foot house, and maybe you got a garage and a couple other buildings, but I would venture a guess and say that you people have 1,000 or 2,000 square feet of ground. And if you've got 2,000 square feet, let's just take 400 square feet to a raised bed. Four fives is 2,000. That's enough for five raised beds. You know, with five raised beds on 2,000 square feet in Cleveland, Ohio, just getting one crop a year, you can get 390 times five, which is 1,950 cabbages. That's 1,950 cabbages. Instead of growing grass, has it ever occurred to you people to grow food? I know it's a wild new idea. Instead of growing exotic bushes and shrubs and gladiolas and tulips instead of having a shade tree, have you ever thought about maybe planting pear trees? Have you thought about apricot trees and apple trees in place of shrubs? Maybe you plant berries, and in place of shade trees and ornamental trees, you plant fruit trees. I know it's kind of a wild new concept, but when I see 500 people here standing in line with their hands out, isn't that demeaning? Do you mean to tell me that putting in a day's work with real sweat coming out of your forehead is more demeaning than standing in line? Asking somebody else to feed you because you can't feed yourself, which is one of the basics of existence, food, clothing, and shelter. Have we become so weak, so poor in our judgment, so poor in our abilities that we can't even feed ourselves? Well, I never heard of such a thing. But it's certainly the way things are today, isn't it? Now, millions of people around the world are unable to feed themselves because of the political circumstances. For instance, in the old Soviet Union, the government just came out and took people's land away from them. Well, what happens when you take people's land away from them is that they don't work very hard. They'll work, but they won't work very hard. Now, I can produce 390 cabbages, one cabbage on a square foot. Commercial farmers can't do that, nor will they. And if I hire somebody and pay him wages and put him to work in my garden, he can't produce one cabbage per square foot either. And that's because he doesn't have the incentive to do that. And that's assuming that he had the knowledge and the skills and ability. He just doesn't have the incentive. And so with the agribusiness model, we destroy the incentive of people. And with the agribusiness model, they're producing lots of cheap food, cheap, inferior food, food that doesn't have vitamins and minerals in it, food that's been pasteurized and homogenized, food that isn't fit for the worms and the insects. And then we feed that to people, and then these people wonder why they get sick, and then they have to spend a lot of their money, time, effort, and energy going to the doctor to get pills and drugs. Remember this lady? She said that she had to choose on her 9 prescriptions. Well, why does this lady have 9 prescriptions? Well, because she's sick. And why is she sick? Well, because she eats agribusiness food. And now she doesn't have enough of the agribusiness food, and so now, because of rising prices, she has to choose between medicine, which was caused by the agribusiness food, or the agribusiness food, which she can no longer afford, because she's not in control. She has given up her freedom. She's given up her control to somebody else. She gave it up to Walmart. She gave it up to Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill. She gave it up to the Department of Agriculture and the politicians like Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy, to those 545 people in Washington, D.C. that make these policy decisions. Now, either one of two things is going on here. Number one, the politicians are the direct cause of the food crisis. Or number two, they're incompetent because they can't solve it. Now, there's a solution to the food crisis, and that is we quit practicing communism. Communism is popular. Communism will get you elected to office. Communism is what we all want and desire because it sounds so good. But it produces stand in line and share the shortage. Now, the bottom-up agricultural model, the bottom-up Ten Commandment model, produces an abundance for everybody. I throw away more than most of you people have in a year when it comes to food. I throw it out. I feed it to my dogs and my chickens. I don't keep pigs, but I feed dogs and chickens. Now, I don't say that to brag. I say that because why don't you have the same abundance? Now, if you'll take a look in Deuteronomy chapter 28, the first 15 verses, and then take a look at Leviticus 26, first 14 verses, here's your Creator says, I'll give you these blessings. These are the benefits. There's 33 of these benefits that you're going to get here. There's a few more benefits that are mentioned in Exodus 23, but those three chapters, Exodus 23, Deuteronomy 28, and Leviticus 26, give you these 33 benefits. And one of the 33 benefits is that your food will reach from the planting to the harvest and from the harvest to the planting. You'll have such an abundance that you will not have room to put it all. I can remember as a kid, we had so much food coming off of our garden, we couldn't get it all canned. We couldn't get it all dried. We couldn't get it all processed. And everybody lived like that with a great abundance. Today, we're out here sharing the shortage, and that's because we practice communism. And these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto is a business model. The Ten Commandments are a business model. The Ten Commandments cover politics, society, the family, education, agriculture, business, economics, religion, money, and law. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto cover politics, society, the family, education, agriculture, business, economics, religion, money, and law. They are competing systems. And if you want to know why the United States of America today is suffering from a food crisis where we're having prices double, it's because we're practicing communism. Now, I certainly don't want to tell you to give up on communism. But for the few of us out here that don't think that work is demeaning, and if you'd like to produce more than enough for yourselves, I'm not standing in line sharing the shortage with anybody. I'm going to go out and do my demeaning work and pull weeds out of my garden and provide for myself. And if nothing else, it'll keep me out of the line and leave more for you people to share among yourselves. There'll be one less guy over here imposing upon you so that you'll have more to share when you're sharing the shortage. I'm not standing in line for anybody. And I'm going to eat off of my own abundance. I'm going to eat off my own labor. I'm not going to eat off the labor of somebody else. Now, if for some reason, you know, this interests you and you say to yourself, well, gee, that kind of makes sense to me. It made sense to us 50 or 75 years ago. I never met an American when I was a kid. No American would have ever said that it's demeaning to work. We do it today. In fact, today, if you're not on welfare and food stamps and taking a dole or a handout, you're called stupid. You know, I'm old enough to draw Social Security. I wouldn't touch that crap if you gave it to me. I don't need Social Security. Maybe you do. And by my not taking it, I'm leaving more for you. I haven't got the time for it. I wouldn't waste my time on a pittance like that. This one guy said, my mother is making $791 a month. Remember that? On Social Security. This lady says she's getting $791 a month. And I'm sitting here saying, well, I wouldn't get out of bed for $700 a month, $800. It's a waste of time, effort, and energy. Let me tell you one more little story here. If you're making less than $100,000 a year, I don't care who you are, if your IQ is 80, and if you can grasp what I'm telling you, you're wasting your time if you're making less than $100,000 a year here in the United States of America. Now, I don't know if you can make $100,000 a year in Venezuela or Brazil. I think you can. I don't see any reason why you can't make that kind of money anywhere in the world. There might be some political regime someplace that might stand in your way, for which you might need to leave that country and go to some other country where the politics aren't as repressive. Maybe you need to leave China. I don't know. It looks like to me they're creating more millionaires in China and in Russia than we are here in the United States, Canada, and Australia. Now, they've given up a lot of communism over there, and they've adopted free market, bottom-up economics. And any time that you practice bottom-up, Ten Commandments, free market, free enterprise, economics, you're going to have wealth and prosperity. And any time you practice these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you're going to have shortages. You're going to have privation. Now, that's been the history for the last 5,000 years of recorded history. I mean, that's just the way it is. And communism is the name that we hang on it today. But whether you call that fascism or socialism, or communal living, or you know, you have some other label or some other handle on it. It's the top-down industrial model that doesn't work, and it's the bottom-up Ten Commandments work, our model that does work. So I'm just a reporter here to give you these facts and figures. Now, the United Nations is telling you that you got a worldwide food crisis. Never had that before. The price of grains have gone wild. You know, these days you hear a lot about world financial crisis, but there's another world crisis underway, and it's hurting a lot more people. And I'm talking about the food crisis. And over the past few years, The prices of wheat, corn, rice, and other basic foodstuffs have doubled or tripled, with much of the increases taking place just in the last few months. High food prices dismay even relatively well-off Americans, but they're truly devastating in poor countries where food often accounts for more than half of a family's spending. See, here in the United States, and indeed here in the Western world, we're only spending 20% of our incomes on food. People in the undeveloped world are spending 60, 70, 80%. It's common for people around the world to be spending 40 or 50%, half of everything that they create and produce on food. And in the poorest countries, you know, they're spending 80%. And in many cases now, they can spend all of their money on food and come up with less than they had last year. Now, those are the people who are going to die first. But don't think for a minute that when those people are dying, they're not going to affect you and they're not going to affect me. Now, we'll take a look at the claims that people are making over here, at least our 545 government officials, as to why this isn't our fault in the Congress, here in the government. And it's the fault of, oh, it's all these events that are taking place and we just don't have any control over it. That's nonsense. Peak oil is a politically induced crisis. Doesn't have anything to do now with the physical availability of oil. And the food crisis is politically induced. Doesn't have anything to do with our ability to provide food for 6.5 billion people. I don't know how many people we can supply or feed on this planet, but I do know that 6.5 billion is easy and in the bag. I'm out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 100 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. And let's see what else we got here. Got to remind you here of all these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Here, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, let's cut it off and we'll see you there. Thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.